Yeah, we're going to talk about two things today. One is law, and one is cats. That's basically, it's very strange, but there will be a lot of cats in this presentation. What we are doing, over the last decades, we've seen a whole number of incidents. And in 2011, I organized a month of leaks called Leaktober. And we must say it hasn't really improved, despite all our efforts. And those who are who have been a CISO at an organization will have found out that getting the attention security deserves is pretty hard. So at a certain point, some politicians have said enough is enough. And we've got a whole evolution of all sorts of laws that are coming out of Europe, and for us Dutchies, not out of The Hague, but out of Europe, that basically is changing our scene. Of course, everybody knows the GDPR, but then we already had the NIS, the Cybersecurity Act. Now we're going to get the NIS 2. After that, next year, the Product Liability Directive and the Cyber Resilience Act. And these laws all do the same. But when the GDPR came, people were shouting, "Nah, can't be. It's terrible. The world will end." And when the NIS came, "Ah, can't do that. World will end." When the Cybersecurity Act came, "Ah, can't do that. World will end." And now when the NIS 2 comes, "Wah, can't do that. World will end." Quit whining, world won't end, and we are going to do it. What is happening with all these laws? What currently is happening is that Europe takes a total different approach than, for instance, the United States by saying everything is risk-related. So instead of just a set of boxes to tick, there is a lot more you should do. And you have to weigh risks, find answers to those risks, or accept them, or bring them back to an acceptable level. And that means taking real steps. Also, Europe is sending a very clear signal that they're done with the magic that some security companies offer. And they are also done with the BS standards that basically are only provided by one company. The game is changing. That is what is happening with all these laws. And the word risk, in every of these laws, you will find it back. So talking about magic, there needed to be some AI involved, so here's some AI. There's your magic. Magic is basically a bunch of BS. If you don't understand it, then apparently it's magic. So what's the real goal? And I will use some text out of the NIS 2 directive. Yeah, Bodhi. This directive lays down measures to aim sorry, th that aim to achieve a high common level of cybersecurity across the Union. Or very simply said, the bar will be raised. This is what we basically are doing here. And how are they doing that? By forcing a whole bunch of organizations into this law. For instance, all the countries of the European Union. Every country has to do a lot. Also, all sorts of company, Jeroen, this is about you. Okay, now, Ziggo, of electronic communication network publicly available electronic communication services, trust service providers, and TLDs. I see people take pictures, you can get the slides. If you promise to cuddle cats. Yes. But a whole bunch of organizations will automatically be part of this. Also, public administration nearly in its total entity, nearly, because in the Netherlands we've got some public administration bodies where one of a half a person is working. It's kind of hard to get them compliant, but for the most part, all cities, all provinces, all national governments need to adhere to the NIS2. Some very critical sectors, not my wording, but the wording of the EU, like transport, banking, energy, well, they were there as well. But also, that's really new, healthcare. We finally are at a point that we think that is kind of important. ICT services management, wastewater, public administration, and space activities. If you're not that critical, but just critical, then, for instance, waste management. So that is very explicit. The company that cleans your street is, as of October 17th, an organization that needs to adhere to the NIS2. And then there are some other organizations that automatically will fall under it as well. I wasn't mentioned, so it's not about me. Sorry? There are two type of entities, essential and important. If you have a company with at least 50 employees or a balance sheet of 10 million euros, you automatically fall under the NIS2. If you're over 250 employees and 50 million euros or more, then you are automatically an essential entity. So it's all about the numbers here. This is a large portion of all the organizations in Europe, but what for us is important in the Netherlands. Many organizations will fall under it. Of course, what was so scary about the GDPR? The fines. So, there are fines. The lower range is 7 million or 1.4%, whichever is higher, as maximum of your annual turnover of your entire company, or 10 million euros or 2%. So, kind of similar to the GDPR, but this is really interesting because think what this means. This is about security. If you run into an incident, nearly always there will be data there that is personal identifiable information. We had the fines already. Now you get a second set of fines. So in a bad situation, it might actually happen that it is 4% of your annual turnover on bad security. Well, there are two different fines, two different organizations that will administer the punishments. So this is kind of interesting. It gets better. Yeah. Well, by April 17th, there needs to be a list of all the entities. That's going to be very challenging. In the Netherlands, the structure will be that organizations themselves will need to report themselves to the government. But that hasn't not yet been built, so that's kind of interesting when that will happen. The law that will implement this NIS2 has been postponed, and the law will go into consultation at the end of the year, somewhere in the fall. So that has, the Netherlands is late again, unfortunately. But as soon as the law will be open, I think a lot of eyebrows will raise. Now something very interesting, and I'm not about to... Yeah, sure.
Will the Dutch member states, the Netherlands, will they get a fine themselves because the implementation is too late?
I don't think so, but I'm not sure about that, because what NIS2 basically says is that the nation has to do something. And the nation needs to ensure. So I don't know if that, but probably what will happen first is that you get a warning letter from the from the European Commission, etc. And then we go like, sorry, we are working on it and really doing it. Having said that, that's the negative side. I think the positive side is, I think the Netherlands is still taking this very seriously. And as soon as you will see the law, the Netherlands, you will see that the Netherlands didn't take the easy way out. So having said that, I'm disappointed it's later, but the positive side of it is we try to do it very well. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, that's a good. I don't know for sure. It's a political thing, I guess. But yeah, there are two ways of making laws in Europe. The GDPR, which is immediately a law that applies also in the Netherlands. Or you have a directive where the directive says to a nation, you have to do the following. And then the nation state will make their own law, which basically also has one big downside. There may be differences between nations. And for a level playing field, that's always a bad idea. So yeah, I agree. That's one of the downsides. But we also know that the GDPR was the most lobbied law probably ever on Earth. So yeah, maybe they were afraid of that, but I'm not sure. And maybe a lot of people miss this, because people start to wake up really late now, and slowly it's starting to sink in that this one might be far, even far more interesting than the GDPR. Now the coolest thing, what is the coolest, as part of the national cybersecurity strategy, member states shall in particular adopt policies addressing cybersecurity in the supply chain for ICT products and ICT services. And now it gets even better, because we are not talking only about the companies that fall under it, but also about the products they use. And there are two ways to get to the supply chain. The second way is that you need to be in control as a company on your security. So you need to know what you're having, what you're running in your house. This is a big game changer. Sorry for my Dutchy English, but this is a big game. On the inclusion and specification of cybersecurity related requirements for ICT products and ICT services in the public procurement, including in relation to cybersecurity certification, encryption, and the use of open source cybersecurity products. If you, as a government, start to buy cybersecurity software, we have got a new set of rules. Software. We've got a new set of cybersecurity rules for you. In the Netherlands, we have this website where you can get your cybersecurity rules for procurement. A lot of people don't even know about it in the Netherlands. So it is sometimes not used. I used it recently at the Ministry of Health, and then somebody came to me and like, are you trying to kill my project? So no, I'm not trying to kill your project, but these are the demands that follow out of the standards that we have to adhere to. So we have it already, but we haven't used it. And now Europe says, go do so. The bio, yeah, the baseline informatiebeveiliging overheid, which is a way of implementing the ISO 27001 and 2. I've got a strong opinion about that, but I want to have it. You know, it's Saturday, it's a fun day, let's not go aggressive. Enforcing. Member states shall ensure that the management of bodies of essential and important entities approve the cybersecurity risk management measures taken by those entities. The ISO has said this already for years, and I'm doing spoiler now, but if you read NIS 2, you basically read, go do ISO 27001 and 2, and add some resilience to that. That is basically what it says. But now it also says, you management, you have to do this. This is an important one for a slide that will come soon. Member states shall ensure the members of the management bodies of essential and important entities are required to follow training. For those Dutchies among us, do you remember DigiNotar?
Yes.
One of the findings of the, how do you say that? The Onderzoeksraad voor Veiligheid, the National Transportation and Safety Board, something like that. That body found out that basically in the boardroom, managers were totally clueless. 13 years later, it's going to happen. And this is a good day. There needs to be a supervisor, and the competent authorities get a lot of things they can do. For instance, on-site inspections, ad hoc audits. So you say it's all okay, and you've got this beautiful report. You know what? We're going to see for ourselves. How would you like that today? To do security scans so basically they are allowed to scan. Well, you were in the workshop yesterday. This gives the power to do so. To request information for the Dutchies among us, vorderen. Request access to data, also vorderen. And request for evidence of implementation of security policies. And this is interesting. In the Netherlands, we all say opzet, bestaan en werking. And basically, that is what an auditor is checking if you've got your policies. But now the operational effectiveness is also part of what they can check. Sorry? You say no, but the law says that the Netherlands needs to assure that. So we have to give them the manpower.
But the RDE, I think, for the critical side, they will be proactive. And for the essential entities, they will...
Yeah, but that if you read through the NIS 2, that is basically, it's not hard written down. It's similar with the GDPR, but if you read it, it's kind of clear that this is why there is a distinction, because the distinction between the two are not really that big. So I think it's indeed, they give this like an option. Similar to the GDPR, you read nowhere that you as a citizen are in control over your data like it's something you own. But it's very clear they mean it. But then, this word, such. So they can check and then they can ask things, such as the results of security audits. Normally you would say like, you make this like a contained list. This is the other way around, it could be a lot more, but the results of security audits carried out by a qualified auditor and the respective underlying evidence. No. The Rijksdienst, the RDI, but it, the law will ultimately appoint an organization, and everybody on the street knows that will be that will be the main point. But there are multiple competent authorities, and one of the things is that a C-cert is explicitly mentioned. So you've got for each sector, you've got C-certs, and they will be appointed as well. So you get a bunch of new. Yeah, I don't know the English word for it, a government body, but regulatory body, bestuursorgaan. Yeah, because not every country has bestuursrecht. So yeah. But don't kill my big point. The respective underlying evidence. This is big. When I read this, I really that night I couldn't sleep. Holy fuck! Can you still deliver for your ISO 27001 all the evidence of a year ago? Can you really prove that you were compliant? This is comply. And comply or explain, this is also funny. Within the government, we have got this rule. Oh, you do comply or explain. So we'll explain it. But what a lot of people don't realize, there's specifically said where you should explain it. You should explain it in your financial document that you release every year. And there there you have to explain why you're not compliant. Basically, you have to shout to the world, we don't stick to this rule, and hardly any government body. So if you don't write it down in your annual results, you're compliant. It's comply or explain. This is the game. So for the Ministry of Health, I'm working on questions. And one logical question would be, what are the explains you've sent for the annual report? And everybody who works for a body, and you know, you deal with comply or explain, this is a very, very logic question to ask.
I don't know if it's the NIS2, but I thought with the new legislation, they can even if you say we accept the risk and the regulatory body thinks that's not a good idea, they can intervene.
Yeah. Yeah.
So before you could say, okay, we think
spoilers. But yeah, they can intervene, definitely. Yeah, no, you're right. That is, yeah. But that is absolutely true. You can intervene, and that will be a big thing.
Yeah.
But is that only on implementing something, or how it's going to be implemented? Because you can't dictate how you implement something.
I've seen rulings of the Dutch. Privacy authority, data protection operator, the AP, data protection authority, and they said, in some situations, in public documents even, that they disapproved how something was implemented. And I can imagine if you say like, yeah, I do malware protection, so I make one network with only hubs, no switches, and I'm putting Windows 95 in, and that will save all my problems. I think that they can intervene. Yeah, or welcome 2024. For companies that are complaining, let's be realistic. Most of the work that has to be done by the government. They need to organize the C-certs, the national and the international cooperation. They need to report internationally. There will be peer reviews, and a system that you can make reporting of incidents possible. I see that all the cat pictures are basically not really showing here. That's what we have to do, and I'm not going to read them all. But there are two things that are very interesting: supply chain security and business continuity management. That was the word I couldn't find earlier. But the business continuity management is for a lot of organizations. There was this one guy who was like, yeah, I'm not going to adhere to the NIS2 because we don't have business continuity management. I went like, what? Really? And you're not worried? So if you get a ransomware, you're basically fucked and you can close down your company. And now you're whining over this law? Really? For those who know the ISO, they might think like, I know a lot of these chapters. You know, maybe the politicians have been inspired or a bit more than that. So there are also a lot of people, yeah, the Dutch law isn't there, so I don't know what I need to do. Well, it's pretty clear what you need to do. And do start with your ISO and your ISAE and your you know, whatever you can think of, it's basically start to be in control and invite an auditor to an auditor to do it. And there you are, the best of it. You can bring, or the government can bring, responsible people of organizations to court, and even put them out of business. So forget about the fines. And think when will this happen typically, if you're in an incident. Because that will say, then people will say like, interesting company, let's have a look there. So I think it's taking it serious. Also stop whining. Attackers don't have a scope. So stop going to your auditor and say like, okay, this is, okay, we will fail that, let's narrow the scope. Fuck it, it won't work. You start doing it. You have to be compliant, you have to prove it. So design, existing, and operating effectiveness. And I'm repeating it, this is a big game changer. We are not used to prove operating effectiveness. It's starting now with the DigiD audit of assessment, but it's not even an audit. But for the first time, but if you fail on your operating effectiveness, then you need time to create the evidence. This is a big deal. Don't think about it too easy. Yeah, 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 personal responsibility, but there are also some people saying that, liability, but that wouldn't be for like government bodies if you're working there. But so I don't know how that will play out ultimately. So I'm a bit careful about that one. But the personal liability ultimately is getting insurance and it's fixed as well. I really think it's very interesting. You're the director of that company. Out. That's one that really, really think will hurt big time. And if you work at the government and another government body steps in and basically says to the chairman, move, I think that is kind of end of career. That is really damaging. So I think that's the most powerful of all. Anthony Tosterhurdy. Oh, you can't see the sticker, but I've got a very cool sticker here. Non-compliant, not pen tested, and unknown risk accepted, ready for production. Those days are over. And really, that makes me very, very happy. Good. Yeah. I haven't brought them, but yes, I'll arrange that with love. And the cool thing of this one is, if you try to peel it off, it will break. Yeah. And Mike's husband helped me make that, so that is kind of cool. Compliance is, for years in the Netherlands, compliance was also when the auditor was sincerely convinced that over the next year things will be okay, you could still pass. There's a second stream of auditors that say like, no, you make a claim, prove that claim to me. I'm a fan of the latter. Compliance is no longer looking a cat in the eyes and then thinking, it will be okay. Those days are gone. And I am sincerely happy that this is starting to happen. Because if you think about it, any grown-up industry has had this for years. And we are still talking about it. Finally, something is happening here. Okay, question for you guys. Who's got an up-to-date configuration management database? Why don't I see any fingers?
For 80%.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Oh, you're 80% compliant. Yeah. And you're hacked on the other 20%. Yeah, exactly that. Unknown shadow IT. It's a pain. NIS2 forces us to know everything. So this is going to be very interesting. So you have to investigate on how to do that. Also, things like doing investigations like pen tests, and I won't stop here too long. Next year I will have a whole talk about pen testing and how you could do that differently. But we started at the Ministry of Health working with a set of basically standard, open standards. OWASP is kind of cool. Just go through these tests and you've got at least a certain set of certainty about what you have or what you won't have. And write it down in such a way it's logical in chapters and make it reproducible. Well, as of NIST 2, when you have to deliver the underlying evidence, I won. Yes. Good. Now we're going to make, now we're going to the open cat part and make it a little bit feline. And for some people might have heard it last year, but we are working at the ministry on a tool called OpenCat. And OpenCat is basically grabbing a lot of information from all sorts of tools, making sure that the proof is reproducible, and then delivers reporting. And the only thing we care about are facts. This one is seeable. This is Keiko. Keiko is our mascot. And what we do is gather the facts, sort it in such a way in a bitemporal database that all is stored in objects. And in I'll explain the rest, but what this database delivers you is the data you do understand is accessible with two time markers. One marker is when we got the data, and the second one is when we understood the data. Because, for instance, you can have something on your website, like a piece of malware, run over it numerous times and don't find anything of it, then all of a sudden an indicator of compromise comes. He said, aha, this piece of code is actually malware. And we've seen that 25 times. So 25 days ago, this started. It brings you a little bit better in control. How do we prove things? Well, it's kind of stupid that, you know, the whole world hasn't done that yet, but basically by grabbing all data, make a hash and give that hash to somebody who can say like, okay, you've shown me the hash, here's my signature. It's that simple. Or throw it in a blockchain if you like to, I don't care, but make some way of proving that at a certain point of time you had a hash. And we do that for the tools we use with the command we used to start a tool, for instance, or the API call, for the data we got back. But also, if, for instance, we need to run a tool that generates network traffic, for the network traffic, the PCAP of that. So you can go as deep as you would like, have it signed, and that makes it forensically sound. Is it that simple? Yes, life can be that simple. So what do we do? We've got boofjes. Will you say that in English? Rascals, yeah. Thugs, yeah. But will we name them thugs in English? No. Boefjes are boefjes. Period. We're Dutch, we're proud of that. Basically, those are the API calls, the containers you start with the software that runs. Of course, we do to containerized. We store the data in a data store called Bytes. Why Bytes? That is the cat of Simon Ruhoff, who was involved in the project earlier. Then we start to analyze the data. What has come in and what do we understand? And what we don't understand, we don't use as a fact because we don't know what it is. That's then everything we understand will go in the Octopus, that is our graph database. As soon as in the optical push, the other cat of Simon, Bits, will basically go through the data and use your own business rules. This is compliant, this is not, this is a problem, this is not a problem. Name it whatever you want. We call it findings, what it delivers at the end. And then a finding is a fact. I've run this business tool, the conclusion was this, that is a new fact. So that goes into the octopus until the fact disappears. Of course, then we know when you were compliant and when you weren't and when you were again. And then you can make all sorts of reports, HTML, PDF, and maybe in the future something like a digital certificate. You've been compliant to the following standards, so you two can talk, because you're both compliant and are allowed to talk. So that's basically what it does. We've got a cat, a log, with all sorts of tools that we use, with, of course, cool pictures of cats. And that range of projects altogether is what we call OpenCat, and how we at least can deliver reports that have forensic sound evidence that you did do your stuff, that you did see or didn't see something. So that is basically what CAT delivers. Cool reports. We are working towards kittens. And by the way, Jeroen in the back there is one of the team members of OpenCat, and he does really cool stuff. Also when he doesn't work on cat, but that's not the issue. We are working on kittens, so that we right now, of course, you can scan the internet. Yeah, that's cool. It's cool, but it's cooler if you can be behind the firewall. So there is somebody now starting to work on kittens to implement it. So you can, for instance, put boofies on a Raspberry Pi or something. We are starting with Project Zorro, because it's not explicitly in the NIST2 yet. But you have to be in control of your entire chain. That means that you also have to be in control of the software quality of things. You can still argue, yeah, but NIST2 doesn't deliver that. Okay, NIST2 doesn't deliver that. In 2 years, you're mine. Because then we get the Cyber Resilience Act, and then it's explicit. And then you have to do it. And Zorro will take evidence from, for instance, all sorts of linters or code quality tools or that type of stuff, and then say like, okay, you've passed these steps, and that gives a new fact. You have done research into the delivery of your product. We are also working on how to exchange data between CAT installations. We call that federated CAT, because if you deliver software to me, maybe you want to show me the result of the CAT, the part from Zorro, and I'm satisfied with the results because you give me a statement of conformity. That's something that we want to make possible. Yeah, sure. I was actually already at question.
It's easier said than done, but are you also thinking about SBOM kitten?
We have some SBOM already in there by having some tools that deliver it. But are we thinking about it? Yes. Even more so, you have to have that. Yeah, but you have to have it. For instance, if you scan WordPress, WordPress has over 1,500 dependencies. You need to get in control over that. And one thing is very clear with the NIST2, you have to be in control. So yes, we are looking that it's still the standard is still not really derived. We want every tool that is on Earth available in my ideal world should be accessible through CAT. Because ultimately, you know, there are very good tools out there, and the only thing we want to do is to harvest that in a very sensible way. Questions? And if you don't know any questions, I brought a few. Yeah, sure.
About the cloud, so I know it's really for governments different topics, but do you guys interface with the cloud for checking out the cloud?
Well, interfacing with cloud, currently have we boofies that do that, because that would be just another boofie. No, but for instance, we're talking to Microsoft about creating that. But yeah, you know, if you say like I use, for instance, Amazon, and I know how to parse log files or whatever, then yes, that would really help. You know, open source is doing things together. So yeah. Yeah, we love JSON, but other formats are welcome as well. And then Jeroen is there. So yeah, if you can make those kind of exports are very valuable. So yeah, that would be really cool.
I already asked the question before, but one of the subchapters of chapter 4 of ISO 27001 states, hey, have you considered other means, other controls? Now that this is becoming more law than guidelines, does that fall under the same, hey, we have controls that aren't in ISO 27001 because of NIS2, so now we also have to take them into consideration for ISO certification?
Yeah, the same answer as yesterday. I haven't thought that through properly. Yet I think that's a very interesting one. I didn't know that rule, so I think I'm hesitant to give an answer. And it's also interesting how the Dutch auditing community will look at that, Norea. So I don't know.
No, and then one other question I had: does NIS2 start to specify what stuff like annual means? Because I've seen companies be like, oh yeah, we did it in 2023, we'll do it again in 2024, but they did it in February of 2023, and they'll do it in November of 2024.
No. And the question is, does the NIS2 direct when you should do what and how often? For instance, how often do you need to do a pen test and that type of stuff? No, that's not directly in there. This is also a fundamental difference. We've got the Anglo-Saxon world, and we've got the Rhineland model, and we are clearly more Rhineland than... So ticking boxes is not typically... So what you probably will see is that the government will ultimately say, like, this is how we interpret it. And also, cybersecurity is something that changes. I was having a fight with somebody who thought that 32-bit keys for encryption for a certain was good enough because he had a document out of 1995. Probably true then. It's no longer the case now. So I'm happy that they didn't do that too much. But yeah. Other questions? That does the same, no, because then I wouldn't have started it. Yes, it is a Dutch tool developed in English. At launch was available in English, Dutch, and Papiamento. And I worked on the Italian translation with some other people, so we are also in Italian. So if you know German, French, Klingon, Frisian, you know, it's an open source project, so join. And also, of course, business rule might be different, but that's why we have that reasoning engine. How we interpret things is how we interpret it. That's not really what you should do. So you can make business rules your own way. So yeah, it is a Dutch tool, it's developed in the Netherlands, but it's a mechanism mainly. So yeah. Yeah, and we've got a catalog, and yeah, I can imagine that you get questions.
So where's the Microsoft tool for that?
Well, we organize days for the community, and I'm going to organize one with Microsoft very soon. So the answer is, hey boss, this is the day you want to go to. Smell the air at Schiphol, it's so nice and fresh.
Smell of kerosene.
Yeah. So it's fully open to public, and it was the probably the first government open source development that was fully done in all transparency. So no hidden repository and then a public. No, we have a public repository, so if we fuck up, you can still find it back on GitHub. So yeah, we are a full open project. Since that, there are more projects that do that, so that's kind of cool. There's one thing that we don't do in public, and that is our retros, because people need to be able to say what they want to say. And I think that you can understand that that people do have a right to a bit of a personal space there. And I can say that sometimes, for instance, I change roles, then sometimes it's very emotional as well. So yeah, and that, yeah. That's the only thing we don't do in public, but everything else is. So yeah, now, if you join or do something, then it's really out there, visible for everybody. Any other questions?
There was a slide with Comic Sans.
No, there wasn't. That's the whole. But you paid attention. Yeah, there was no slide with Comic Sans. Yeah.
Where is OpenCup in
10 years? Where's OpenCup? Yeah. World domination!
Can't say that within the hex space, just saying.
Okay. Ivo? Yeah?
Suppose you have an organization who just learned about this and thinks it's probably not compliant at all. Where would you advise them to start?
No, that's actually very good. What you will find in a lot of these organizations is that also the structure isn't there. And what all these standards do is that you write down taken, verantwoordelijkheden, bevoegdheden, tasks, responsibilities, and yeah, bevoegdheden is. Privileges. Of some what you are allowed to do. And start writing that down. That's really the first step, because then you know, in a lot of organizations, it's totally unclear who is responsible for what. So how do you know that you're sitting with the right people at the right table? So that would be the very, very first step. And then you get the interesting conversations. So, and then get some help, because get the structure done and your information security management system written down for organizations that are basically at maturity level zero is a nightmare. Maaike. Yes, Kaike does go on holiday, not to France then, but she went to Zagreb. She was allowed to watch in the cockpit. She flew business class. The flight was kind of full. She was a tourist. She ordered a lot of food in her hotel room. Was noisy, and then somebody made a complaint, and she ended up in court. Thank you very much.